And today's topic is the test of trust, the test of trust. And how many of you have done ropes courses? Yeah, I have also. Ropes. In ropes courses, you often are asked to do something like, okay, I practiced this before and it worked. Okay, and maybe, yes. Okay, but now I need it. Yay! Okay, and sometimes you do something called a trust fall. A trust fall. And I couldn't get the video into my PowerPoint, but sometimes what holds people back from that trust fall is the mistrust, which we have greater trust in than trust itself. We have more mistrust than we have trust. So trust dies, but mistrust blossoms. There's a video that I wasn't able to squeeze in here. I didn't have the techno savvy to do it, but I will someday. And it's a trust fall that goes bad. It's at an office, and a woman in a dress, in a skirt and heels is going to do the fall. And the pizza's delivered, and she falls right down. And I think that's what's in all of our minds. That is what's in all of our minds in a trust fall. Will they really catch me? Will they really support me? Or will they let me fall? Will I be safe or will I hurt myself? So the test of trust is to trust at all times. To trust at all times. In our journal this last week on the test of trust, one of the stories is a story I really love about keeping your heart open. It's a teaching story. It was told that years ago, a man, a widower, had a 5-year-old son that was the light of his life. And he was away on a business trip, and while he was away, bandits came, kidnapped his son and burned down the whole complex. All of his buildings, everything was burnt. So when he came back and he went through the ashes, he found the carcass of something. He assumed it was his son. He then had that carcass, had it burned into ash, and he kept that bag of ashes around his neck. In deep, deep grief. Well, one day, months or maybe years later, his son escaped from the bandits, and he came knocking at the door late at night. "Father, Father, I'm here. Please let me in." And the father thought it was school children playing a prank. And the son knocked again. "Father, Father, please let me in." And again, the man said, "Don't be cruel to me. You know my son is dead." And the son continued knocking, knocking, knocking. But to no avail, the father would not open the door, and eventually he went away. Is that us? Is that us? You see, if God is all there is, and God is love, then love is happening all the time, and love is always knocking at our door. But if we're in deep grief about anything, we can't hear love's call. We can't hear that child that is our heart's desire, who is alive. We can't reclaim our good or claim new good because we're so focused on the pain. So the first thing about a test of trust is keep your heart open, to open your heart and keep it open regardless of what's happened or what is appearing to happen. So in our money, it says, "In God we trust." I really love that. In Canada, it doesn't say that on our money. Here it says, "In God we trust," unless they took it off. I really think it's a great thing to remind ourselves of, that we trust in God, something greater than we are that operates in an entirely wonderfully logical way, that we can count on, that it's always there for us. In God we trust. Do you trust in God? Or do you trust in that controlling part of you that knows how to make things happen? When you do that, you edge God out, and that's one of the acronyms for ego. You edge God out. When you say no to good, no to God, no to another way, a greater way, God's way, you edge God out. So in God we trust. So ask yourself, do I really trust in God? Do I have a deep faith that no matter what I see around me, something wonderful is happening because God is for me? That's the truth. God is for you. God is for me. So what is God's nature? Because when we say, I trust in God, are we saying some Superman in the sky is going to save me if I do really stupid things? No, we're not saying that. We're not saying that. What we're saying that God has two aspects to its nature. And Ernest Holmes says, all is love and all is law. So God's nature is love and law. Love points the way and law makes the way possible. And all that means is your deepest desires are communicated to you through your heart when you pay attention and say yes to them and plant those desires regardless of what you see around you. Those desires become your experience. That's called the law. How the law works is by corresponding to your thought, to your convictions. What are you convinced about? Now, here's the thing is, in the integrity of your own mind, in your own innermost being, you're the only one who knows what's going on in there. You might have it all together on the outer. You might be handsome or beautiful, have a great job, so to speak. You might have excellent relationships, or it looks like you do. And if all of that is a sham, if you're trying hard, if it's all the thing in you that always gets things done, not the one that lets things happen, but the one that's the doer, you haven't let the law work. I release and I let go. I release. So we plant the seed, then we let it go. The love that we are determines what seeds are ours to plant. And there is nothing beyond limits. There is nothing that you can't aspire to, regardless of your age, your station in life, your wealth, your health, anything. There is whatever it is that you want, wants you. It wants you to be it. It wants you to have it. So how do we do that? We listen to our intuition, and that's the whispers of God within us. I've been talking about this for, it seems like years, but at least the last 3 weeks. You need to get still. You need to get still often. You need to get quiet so you can hear that voice for God, so you can hear that intuition that's always talking to you. And it says things like, you are so beautiful. You're so capable. You're so strong. I love you. I trust you. You always make wise choices. That's what it says. It doesn't say what the monkey mind says. It doesn't say, you'll never get that right. There, you blew it again. You didn't keep your word. You were late. You were whatever. It doesn't say, you'll never get better. It doesn't say, you can't overcome. I was reading a couple of, intuition is very, very important in my life, and as it is in all of yours, whether you pay attention or not. But when I was the first time I can remember that I made a decision that wasn't based on logic, but was based truly on a feeling that I need to do this thing. And I might have shared this before, but it's not one of those big things, but it led to big things. I was the president of our board of trustees in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I was studying practitioner, had my practitioner training study. And I was writing my report for the annual board of trustees, the annual meeting for the church. And I was at my school because I didn't have a good printer at my home. In fact, I don't think in those days, it was so long ago, I probably didn't really have a computer or printer at home. It was all at work. And in the high school I was teaching in, I was allowed to be there only when the janitor was there, which is an interesting thing itself, isn't it? So the teachers couldn't be there except when the janitor was there. So anyway, the janitor told me he was leaving in 5 minutes, and I was just about done. I'd written pages and pages of this report, and my computer failed. I lost everything. And the next two words I wrote were, "I quit." And I thought, well, that's reactive. That's reactive. What are you quitting? But it came from somewhere deep. It was like, this is the right thing to do. I'm quitting. Well, I'm quitting the Board of Trustees. Really? So I went, the next day, I went to the meeting, and I gave them a verbal report, and I said, and please accept my resignation. I'm quitting the Board of Trustees. And they all went, oh. Because I'd been instrumental in bringing this thing to Edmonton in the first place, and et cetera, et cetera. They went, oh, what's wrong? There must be something wrong. Are you sick? Did something happen? Did you get a prognosis? Did you lose something? What's wrong? I said, nothing's wrong. Absolutely nothing's wrong. And it wasn't. But I still knew I quit were the right two words to write. Can you relate? Times when you did, you knew it was right, but you had no proof. Well, the next week, visitors came from Calgary to Edmonton, friends of mine, and they were studying to be ministers. They said, oh, Dr. Arlene just started a new ministerial class. And I went, bingo. If I were so heavily involved in this center, I wouldn't be able to pursue my training, my dream. So the light went on, but it took a whole week. It took 8 days of unknowing and trust, the test of trust. In the Guidepost magazine, there's a story about a woman who did a similar thing, but she was in a job that she really didn't like. And so finally, she just gave her resignation. And she went home and she said she just felt lighter than she had for years. And her children and her husband came home. Why are you home? Because usually she didn't get home until much later. And she was already had the dinner cooking. And she said, I quit my job. And and her husband said, well, I want to support you in doing what you need to do, but I don't know that we can make it without some income from you. They went through the budget. It looked pretty skinny. Looked pretty hopeless. And she thought about what she loved. And she thought about something she hadn't done since she was a child, how much she loved paint and how much she loved color. And she remembered the smells of the crayons and the smells of the paint. And it just made her heart happy. So she painted her ceiling these beautiful, beautiful design, this a certain kind of plant. Did you read this, June? No, okay. It's one that it's mostly green leaves and whitish flowers. She painted her whole ceiling so that when she would look up, her heart would be happy because she would be seeing what she loved. And she was so proud when she finished it. She had the best sleep that night. She thought, I have to show my friends. So she invited all her friends in to see her bedroom ceiling. And one of them was pregnant and said, oh, would you please do my baby's room? And on and on and on. And when she got the check for the first thing that she was doing just as a gift, it was enough. It was the difference between having to go back to work or not. She'd followed her intuition. Now she's living her dream, doing what is hers to do, right? It's hers to do that painting. That corporate job that she left might have been okay for someone else, but it wasn't hers. So listen to your intuition. It's God whispering to you. Now what? No matter what appears, remember that you're enough. Remember that you have enough because you are enough. You're made in the image and likeness of the one presence. So you are enough right now, not tomorrow when you get that degree or that job or when you lose that 30 pounds or when you go back to the gym, whatever it is that your idea is, right now you are enough. And so the test of trust is to remember your enoughness and to ask for and receive assistance. This morning, I came in, I was, you know, I don't like this thing. It feels awkward to me, but I need to keep myself on track, so I thought this is better than what I usually do. So we'll see. But I was a little uptight, and Kathy said, come, and she said, let's breathe together three times. She didn't need it. She was giving it to me because she could see I wasn't fully in my body. I wasn't fully relaxed and one with the divine. So here's the thing. When someone offers help, take it. And when you need help, ask for it. So I'm going to do that right now. We have a huge thing coming up a week from tomorrow. We're going to have 200 ministers in this room for 4 days. And I need help. Here's the specific help I need. Reverend Michael and Pam Rock need help too for volunteers. I'm not going to ask for that. I have a friend from Edmonton. Some of you met her. Her name is Reverend Connie Phelps. She got married when she was in Kenya. They're in Edmonton saving money to go back to Kenya. She and her husband need a place to stay that week. So whoever has a guest room big enough for two, which mine isn't, it's really good for one, but not for two, and you would like to have some really interesting conversations because they're a pretty interesting couple, please see me after service. That's my request. I'm asking for help. I was talking to my prayer partner about it, and she said, but if you give up your room and you sleep in the guest room, everything's going to be out of place for you, and you're going to spend the whole week in chaos. And I said, that's right. I don't want chaos. I want divine order while I'm hosting all of these people are my colleagues, my friends, and I'm very excited about them coming to our place. Most of them haven't been here, but I don't know exactly if that's true or not because I haven't seen the list of who's coming. What I do know is that the Wednesday Wisdom, the week after this coming week, will be a couple or three visiting ministers who will be giving the service, which I think is great. So it might be Ken, Gordon, it might be John Waterhouse, it might be, wow, it's going to be some wows. It might be Barbara Waterhouse, it could be any one of a number of people who are going to be here. As soon as I know, I'll let you know, and then you can let your friends know because you won't want to miss that. Okay, so remember you're enough. Ask. So many of you have experienced loss, and some even tragedy. I was reading today, and I've heard it, Joel Osteen got me interested if this was true or not. A man by the name of Horatio Spafford had 5 children, a son and 4 daughters. His son died of scarlet fever. Then he lost his whole business in the Chicago fire. He had planned a trip for the whole family to Europe, and so it was, of course, by boat. This was in the 1800s. And he wasn't able to go. So he sent his 4 daughters and his wife ahead of him. He was going to follow later. There was a collision. Another ship collided with their ship. And all 4 daughters' lives were lost. When he got to the same part of the ocean, he had asked the ship's captain to let him know when he was there. And the ship captain did. And he took out his notebook and he wrote what became a very famous Christian hymn, which is, "All is well with my soul." All the verses are about how tragedy can happen, and all is well with my soul. What an amazing, inspiring way to be. You've just lost your whole family, except for your wife. He, by the way, went on to have more children with that same wife. And he wrote this, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like seas, sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, all is well with my soul." Such great advice. Such a great place to come from. All is well with my soul. All is well in my life. No matter what's happening. Now, if he can do that, if he can pin those words in that tragedy, most of us could, in this moment, breathe a little and say, "You're right, all is well with my soul. I am right. All is well with your soul. All is well with your soul." Just let breathe that a little bit. Feel it. Let's say it together. All is well with my soul.
All is well with
my soul. All is well with my soul.
All is well with my soul.
All is well with my body.
All is well with my
mind.
All is well.
All is well.
And so it is.
And please join me in prayer. So in this moment, I remind myself that the thing itself is what I'm always trusting. I remind myself that this thing is the first cause for all creation. It is everywhere present. It is the source of all supply. It is the good of all. I trust this one in me. And I trust myself to cooperate with it, to pay attention to the whispers of God, to plant those seeds, not as a wish, but as a fact, as an objective, as a decision. I plant those seeds with grace and with love and with great gratitude. I know that whatever is happening in anyone's life, mine or anyone else's, but the truth is that at the very center of being, there is a stillness, a wholeness, and all is well with it. For it is good and only good. It is life itself. I know that today is a new beginning for each one here and for me. A beginning of noticing the good, of praising it, of giving thanks for it, of experiencing more of it, of turning even in the darkest times to the presence and awareness of the light within. And I know that this is a blessing, not only to self, but to others. I know that it's good and very good. And I give great thanks that this one presence, this one power is responding to each one of us right now. I declare and give thanks for all the good that is already now present and for that which is coming, for the seeds that are about to blossom. I give great thanks, and then I simply release this word to the action of law. I accept it's complete, and please join me in saying, and so it is.